We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Kelly.
I'm Mike Kelly, the voice of the Missouri Tigers. Welcome to this week's Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Coming up, you'll hear my weekly conversation with Barry Odom. We'll also hear from Jim Sterk. He joined me last Thursday on Tiger Talk. First, though, this from Shelter Insurance.
That's the secret phone.
The what?
Remember? I told you my dad's a shelter agent. When that phone rings, he rushes out to save the day. Whether someone's home or car gets damaged, my dad is always there to help. He has the coolest job ever.
Well, my dad's an astronaut.
That's cool too, I guess.
Find your insurance superhero at shelterinsurance.com.
Barry Odom's football team enjoyed a week away from the schedule. Tigers will play at South Carolina coming up on Saturday. Game kicks off at 11 o'clock Central Time. Our coverage begins at 9. Here's my weekly conversation with the Tigers head coach. How'd you spend your week away from the schedule?
Well, the things that we wanted to do getting into the game plan for South Carolina held true on. So after the Georgia game, we treated last Sunday just like a normal Sunday for us on meetings, film, lifting, stretch routine for our guys, review the film, take away what we needed to take away from it and continue to move forward. And then our Monday for our staff last Monday was like a normal game week Monday for us on a full game plan of South Carolina. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday were just like a normal game week for our team with practice on Tuesday and Wednesday. Thursday, we just went a heavy meetings and run through instead of a practice. And then we were on the road recruiting as a staff Wednesday night, all day Thursday, all day Friday and Friday night, and then yesterday. So players will be back in today. We'll go through meetings and a short lift, and then we'll get on the field tonight and have another bonus practice for South Carolina. And then we're locked into a normal game week.
Yeah, one third of the season is complete. You're 3-1 through the first four games. Just from your point of view, evaluate where this team is through four games.
I think most of every aspect that you look at, you know, offense, the structure and scheme wise, we're about where I thought we could move progressively. The things that. You know, there's some really good things that we've done. I think also some things that didn't help our cause last week. The turnover margin is still going to be such a true indicator to our success or lack of. So we've got to do a better job of protecting the ball. I think more than anything, we know who and when we can vertically stretch the field with, and then some underneath things in our pass game with the ability to use both tight ends, a couple of our new runners in Beatty and then Knox at the receiver. I think both of those guys maybe have exceeded what I thought they could do up to this point. Now we can really plug them in and keep pushing because they've got the maturity to go do it. Defensively, we are learning still a little bit on how much is too much on a couple of guys. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there were some things 2 weeks ago that we learned about ourselves that I think we're, you know, the bye week happened for a lot of reasons at the right time. And one of those is we played fairly well defensively at most of the game against Georgia. So I think we got some of those things corrected. But also personnel wise, you know, we spent a lot of time over the course of the first part of the season on really adapting and moving some guys around in different situations, situational football, and personnel groupings. And we got that solidified over the last few days.
So under the new rules adopted this year by the NCAA, you can now play four games before making the decision to redshirt a player. Are there any players that played in the first four games that you've now made the decision to redshirt? And are there any players that were maybe on the fence that were maybe close to playing that you've now elected to go ahead and hold off for a year?
Well, we know that the season and the grind of the next 8 weeks will take its toll on our depth. So I do feel comfortable in position that we've got some guys, you know, for example, Mike Ruth at the offensive line. He played the first couple of games in some special team situations, got him in the game, you know, when it was out of hand. And he did really well. I don't think he's quite ready to go in, and it's not worth, you know, I don't want to use the word waste, but it's not worth wasting a year of development, because I think getting the year back for him in the end will serve us really, really well. He's going to be a great player at the offensive line. That would just be one example. I think really, for the most part, Mike, everybody else that's played in that freshman class, we're going to keep plugging them in because they've done enough to this point that I think they can really, really help us down the stretch on being impact players.
From a defensive standpoint, I think you would agree, you've got to figure out a better way to get pressure on the quarterback, don't you?
Yeah, and that's a lot of our focus here the last few days on ways that, even though we got a couple of hits on the quarterback on third, you know, a third down percentage against Georgia was 77%, I believe, defensively, and that's really, really good. So we were doing just enough that they felt the pressure. We didn't get enough hits on the quarterback, so we've got to continue to work to get there. And you know, right now we don't have a guy on the defensive end that is going and winning a one-on-one battle consistently. So, you know, is that technique? Is that recruiting? Is that a combination of coaching and maybe some of the different protections we're getting? All encompassing. You know, we've got to continue to evaluate all that. But there's going to be a point we're going to win a one-on-one battle, and then teaching, we've got to do a great job on giving our guys an opportunity and putting them in position to be able to go win and play fast.
You go to South Carolina this week to take on the Gamecocks Saturday afternoon. They're a team now 2-2 overall. They lost last night at Kentucky. And oh, by the way, we both know Mark Stoops has done a terrific job with that program, and they're really good this year. Jake Bentley goes out late in the game with what is being said as a knee injury. What were your impressions as you watched the game and Will Muschamp's team?
Well, it was a really good game, and you know, both teams. You know, I thought it was a really, you know, you talk about our league and the way that the game is played, and usually within the first couple of words that come out of your mouth, very physical, and that held true last night on the line of scrimmage on both sides. I thought that you know, they played with a position and in chance to win the game. And you know, Mark has done a great job at Kentucky. He's had time to do it, and he's done it the right way. But also, I know Will have the things that I would plan on us seeing the quarterback. You know, he's such a great competitor, and he'll be back and be ready to go. But the way that they're utilizing the different tools that they have offensively, a little bit different than what they've done in the past. They're playing quite a bit of tempo. And then defensively, they've got a front that that I'm impressed with.
Hey, Coach, thanks so much. I look forward to seeing you later this week, and we appreciate your time today.
All right, Mike. Have a great week. Thank you.
All right, thank you. That is Barry Odom, Missouri's football coach. His team, 3-1 on the season, off to South Carolina coming up this Saturday. After this from Shelter Insurance, we'll hear from Jim Sterk.
Your voice lets him know he's safe. Shelter Insurance does the same for you. Roadside assistance is now included with your auto policy. So if your car leaves you stranded, just call and we'll take care of you while you take care of what's most important. Find out more at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter. Some restrictions apply.
Last Thursday night on Tiger Talk, Missouri's Director of Athletics, Jim Stark, joined me for the entire hour. Here's part of that conversation. With that, let's say good evening to the Director of Athletics at the University of Missouri, Jim Stark. How are you tonight?
Great, Mike. It's great to be here, and it's nice to get our coaches out and about as far as recruiting and all. So it's good to give Barry a week off and head out there and engage the youth and coaches across the state. And so I know he's doing a great job, and I'm excited about where that program is going.
Yeah, I just a personal note real quick. I just want to thank you and the folks from Mizzou Sports Properties, Learfield, everybody involved for making last Saturday a very special day for me. This shouldn't be about me, but I just want to say thank you very much.
No, that was really fun to surprise you.
Oh, you did?
We surprised you with his 300th straight game. I have a lot of, admiration for what you've done and the great job that you've done for Mizzou, and it's really, really neat to recognize somebody like that and that has done something that well, and it's really fun to do that, and to surprise you is really good, because my first time that I went on with you on the air, you surprised me with the Mo Miracle and against San Diego State, where I was coming from. So it was a great surprise.
And you've reminded me of that on multiple occasions. Yeah, but no, again, from Lori and myself, heartfelt thanks. The Georgia game, we're going to talk about that in just a moment. The fall sports season, though, really off and running. And so many times people just think football, basketball, women's basketball. They don't think about soccer. They don't think about volleyball, men's and women's cross country. And other things that are going on right now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that we're at the end of September already. It's crazy. So a lot of good things going on. I'm really excited about this year. Last year was a record year, tied our record performance as far as 17 teams making it to postseason play, and then going on. And this year, I'm even more excited about the future of Mizzou athletics. So it's a fun time.
Give fans a little bit of insight in terms of, and we want to recognize all sports, but certainly there are three that help drive things. Football and basketball, women's basketball garners most of the attention. To get those three primary sports all into postseason play meant what for your department last year?
When football in the fall, it's obviously the major sport that directs a lot of attention and to your program and all, but just the overall feeling of, the first half of the season wasn't great, 1-5, and then going on and winning six games, going to postseason play. But for the first time, which I was really surprised at this stat that Nick Jost, our communications director and executive director, said, it's only the second time since 81-82 that Mizzou has had football, men's and women's basketball go to postseason at the same time. And so we want to make that a regular occurrence, and that should be. And I think that's what we're striving for, our student athletes are striving for, our coaches are striving for, and all our other sports. We need to be in the top 25 and in each of our programs, and that's where we're aspiring to do on a daily basis.
Yeah, and you certainly have the right people in place to help lead those programs as well. Your takeaway from the Georgia game?
I told, it's always tough. After a game where you lose, but, I told Barry I really felt that if that's the number two team in the country, then I really like where we're going. And if you can continue to move them forward, I'm really excited about the rest of the season.
Yeah, you look back, and as you know, having been a part of the game, five plays. Really, it came down to five, the scoop and score, the block punt, and then three really breakdowns in pass coverage in the second half. And you lose by 14 against a team that, was 3 points away from winning a national championship a year ago.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about where our team is. They're really a focus group of young men that have really dedicated themselves to having the best season they can. And that was a setback, and having, you know, three turnovers that were really, really key hurt us. But I think overall I'm really excited, and I think the Mizzou fans should be as well.
I did not hear the attendance that day. Was it a sellout? I can't remember.
It was really, really close, okay. And we were, you know, with the teardown of the south end zone, we're trying to determine, okay, what is our maximum attendance? So we tore down about 10,000 seats. It's I think right now they're projecting that right now our maximum attendance is right around 60,000, just over. We were just under that, but it was the Block M hillside, the north end zone, was really full. It was a great atmosphere. It was a great day, Chamber of Commerce day. It was
terrific.
Just beautiful football day, kind of like today in Columbia. It was really, really neat to have that kind of environment and have Georgia there and compete really nose to nose with them. I think we have nothing to be ashamed of. Some turnovers that maybe the end result wasn't where we wanted to be, but overall, just a great performance.
All fixable errors as you move forward. The other thing, too, you look at now we're 4 weeks into the season, bye week now. I think it comes at a really good time for a variety of different reasons, but most of us thought coming into the season that this team would probably be 3-1 at this juncture.
Yeah, you wanted to be at least 3-1, and we're there. I think the mentality and the way the players and the coaches have approached this, I think we're right where we want to be, and heading into next week and have 2 weeks to prepare for South Carolina and going down there in a very hostile environment, and I'm really looking forward to that one.
So you just got back from your national meetings with other people in your position around the country. What are some of the common topics that folks in your chair are discussing in this day and age in college athletics?
You know, it's an interesting time. One, it was in Washington, D.C., and Tom McMillan took over the Division 1A. Dutch Bachman had run it for a long time. He was a former AD at Oregon State University and then took it over. And it's the football bowl subdivision group, basically, is the athletic directors that get together, and he had a good agenda, I guess, as far as NCAA legislation, the Rice Commission, and the basketball legislation that was a result of the FBI sting operation and changing media landscape. I thought that was really, really interesting. We had a consultant, and then John Wildhack, who's now with Syracuse, he as an AD, but a longtime ESPN, amateurism and the lawsuits that are threatening kind of the status quo of amateurism and the NCAA and how that all works, and then the kind of the future of college football.
Curious about the one topic, changing the media landscape. Elaborate on that for us. What exactly does that mean?
So just, you know, just as far as viewing habits and where people are, you know, talking about cutting the cord, and that's with the cable and over the air, the NBC and CBS and ESPN, being able to kind of pick and choose what they're watching, and so kind of I there were some staggering figures on the value of what Netflix, you know, what that corporation is worth right now, and where, what kind of player are they going to be in the sports realm, and a lot of people have changed their viewing habits and how they watch things, and so that whole the big boom as far as doubling, I think Joe Castellon was there. He spoke about when he started. I think their budget has doubled during his time. So it's gone from somewhere in the 50 millions to 100, you know, 150 million or something. It's crazy the numbers that television has driven, and ESPN and ABC kind of really when they put the cable model together and were able to drive cable subscriptions to what they were paying for properties, it just jumped significantly. So that whole realm, where it's going and trying to predict where it's headed is something that, you know, it was interesting to listen to. We have our ESPN contract goes into the 2030s or something with 2032, but CBS portion of the contract with the SEC, I think, is done. It'll be negotiated in 2021 or 22, but it's done in 23. So a new contract. And you know, one of the questions were, you know, what's the value moving forward, and can we sustain the model of currently, you know, the spending model and the expenses of intercollegiate at the highest level? And I was glad to hear, in which I thought was the case, CBS contract with the SEC right now is undervalued almost. They think the next contract will be 2x. It'll be twice as big as what CBS is paying. So I think that's the case, that we need other competitors in the marketplace, and whether Netflix or Google or, you know, whoever enters that space. It's an interesting time. Obviously, you want to, you know, sustain and continue to move forward, but it's a changing landscape.
You know, the interesting thing to me would be the ESPN future when it comes to the amount of money that they continue to spend, particularly in the college athletics realm, given the number of different difficulties that they've faced with subscribership and other issues that they've had in that whole parent company type thing. Any idea kind of where they may fall out of it?
You know, really smart people that are running that Disney organization and running that, you know, they talk about, you know, returns as far as, you know, they're a publicly traded company, and
right.
and so they're talking, and every person that holds a stock, you know, they're holding them accountable and their board and all, but they're still their return on investment is still in the 28% tile range. They were doing some amazing numbers before that, so they're still making money. It's just not as significant as it was, and they're losing subscribers. Someone said, you know, maybe 3% a year or something like that. So it's not significant, but the it's a changing landscape that they want to be. You know, the good thing is live sports is the most highest in demand property that anyone can have on their program.
You know, one of the other things that's been interesting is Major League Baseball's entry into non-traditional forms of broadcasting, and I'm talking primarily now making games available on Facebook is something that they did this year. How it was received, not well in local markets, but those outside the local market, I think, enjoyed it. I'm just curious, from your perspective, would that be something that should be tried, if you will, to take a game off of a traditional form, whether it be cable or over the air, and put it on more of a internet-based type?
I don't think the folks in this room would like that, and I probably wouldn't enjoy it either, you know, because I'm not on Facebook and,
right.
and all. But so I wouldn't want to be the leader in the clubhouse on,
right.
on that one. But I think it's something that where it's going, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe 10 years from now, Facebook is the leader, and you want to be on there, but not right now, and so it's not something that I would want to do.
It's across the board in college football. Attendance is down, and it's been going down over the last several years. It's something that I know you all talk about, that, and there are a lot of challenges that you face. It's more than just what's happening on the field. There's a lot of things, battling millennials, battling connectivity, things like that. So as you discuss attendance in college football, what are some of the things that come to mind in terms of your point of view on that?
One, just, you know, the world's changing, and I think when I started watching football, you know, you'd have one game a week, and it was pretty grainy as far as, you know, that black and white picture that you could see. It wasn't great to watch it at home. It's changed significantly as far as the ability to see how clear it is with HD quality TV and how big and replays and things like that. And so that's part of what we're balancing. And you know, when talking to the folks, the leadership at the Kansas City Chiefs, their season ticket base has gone down the last 3 years, but overall attendance is still strong, and overall revenues have increased, but it's through group sales, and it's more social and creating those kinds of things that people want to spend time with their friends and family at. And so those are the kinds of things that you're looking for and changing. And so that was part of the motivation with the South End Zone. Obviously, football wanted an operations building, a new operations building, but I wanted, instead of just 10,000 static seats there, we wanted different options for people to be able to experience the game, have fun, socialize, and really change kind of the experience that people could have at Faurot Field.
One of the things that you battle with the millennials, and particularly with students, is getting them, first of all, engaged in the game if they come to the game. And that's the other figure that's been interesting, is that student ticket sales in the FBS schools has been down 2 across the board on average. It's a unique phenomenon that we're seeing. And the result of that is that there are several stadiums that are now decreasing in terms of capacity to kind of overcome that, if you will.
Yeah, and I was at a meeting probably 4 or 5 years ago, and I listened to Ballmer. He was the Clippers, you know, he bought
Steve
the Clippers.
Ballmer, yeah.
Yeah, at an amazing amount, but he was talking about virtual reality and things like that, and I can remember seeing Greg Burns' face, who had just taken over Alabama, and he has 100,000 seats, and Ballmer's talking about, you know, a smaller venues and more interaction and things like that, and a lot of those guys turned white. You know, they were just like pale of what, oh my gosh, you know, where is this thing going? But he left it also that said, hey, you're always going to have those fans that want to have that experience at a game, have their friends and family around them,
right,
and be able to witness that. You need to do a better job at it, and kind of challenged us to really take that on and improve the game day atmosphere at our games. And so we need to continue to evolve and do better. I think the atmosphere at the Georgia game was really it was really outstanding, and people, I just, you know, thank all our fans for creating that kind of atmosphere, and I think the players really appreciated that as well.
I'm always amazed too at the number of people that just show up to enjoy the tailgate, and I mean that sincerely, is that there are a lot of people that don't care about coming into the game. They just want to have the atmosphere of being around friends and family during the course of that Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and so, you know, for those that haven't had established tailgates, we created last year a concert series, and this year we've continued that and creating that Tiger Town area where, you know, jumpy houses for kids and the Tiger Walk going through there, and it's created a nice area that people can come and enjoy, and they may not have to have a great parking spot. They can park a ways away and then come there and have a great pregame experience, and then get into the game and enjoy the football game.
Does length of game, in your opinion, impact attendance?
I don't think length of game as opposed to time of game, and not, you know, if we could say, you know, all our games are going to be at 1 o'clock, or
right,
they're all going to be at 11 o'clock,
yeah,
and people could plan, I think that really helps. I think, you know, having it 2 weeks out and you're still deciding, so people are deciding on games, you know, 2 weeks away, whether they're going to come or not. And so that's the thing. If anything, in the future, if we can somehow get to a better situation so we're not waiting 2 weeks before the game to, based on television time, that would be better.
And that's going to be interesting to see if your television partners will relinquish that 10-day window to pick and choose what they feel will be the best games on what platform.
They probably won't.
Yeah. And interesting, as you know, Howard and I had the opportunity to go down to the SEC offices in August for an officials meeting that was hosted by Steve Shaw. But Greg Sankey was there, and really, I've got so much respect for him as a commissioner and the job that he does. But, you know, he basically did an informal, impromptu news conference, if you will, with all the SEC broadcasters and say, what do you want to talk about? And one of the things that was concerning him was pace of play. and making sure that replays are done in a timely manner. His goal is to have those done within 2 minutes, if at all possible. And then also looking at other creative ways where you're protecting the safety of the student athlete, but also making sure you're keeping the fans engaged as the game is being played.
Yeah, it's really, they have a great studio there where they have people that are reviewing each of the plays and each of the games going on. And so one of the fun things they do, did they do that to you guys?
And we were in the hot seat.
The hot seat, they call it. And Mark Womack, the associate commissioner, is yelling at you. You know, their fans are screaming. They want to know the answer. And you're looking at the replay and trying to decide whether it's, you know, what it should be the call, whether to overturn it or keep it as it is. And so they love to stick the ADs there. I just heard today on our AD call, they're going to stick the chancellors and president in that role. And so they're going to, those that are up for it are going to be sitting in that role and trying to make a decision on things.
I don't know how you felt, but when you sit down, it's intimidating.
Yeah, and he's going, it's been a minute already. You got to come up with a decision.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we talked, our group talked ourselves out of what was initially the right answer just by listening to somebody else in our group when we should have just made the initial go with your gut feel, right? One of the other things, though, that I'm curious about in terms of pace of play is, you know, what are ways that we could maybe change rules to impact pace of play? Do we need a first down? Do we need the clock to stop after every first down? Or is that something that's integral in terms of a safety aspects of the game? I'm not sure. I'm asking you the question.
No, I people smarter than me will decide on that. But I think we've really looked at every part of the game and trying to continue to move it forward and how they start the clock quicker and things like that. The game management, and I think they're doing a good job of focusing in on that and making sure that it's under 4 hours. But if you get into these, you know, two teams with passing attacks that are throwing a lot and not running the ball as much, that doesn't burn much clock, and so it makes the games longer.
And there are some games that should go long. They deserve to go long because of how well they're played and because of, you know, just the dynamics of what's taking place, whether it goes to overtime or something like that.
How long was our Purdue game? Because that was seemed I wanted that game to end with us winning that thing.
I would have taken that, you know, up by what? 17 in the second quarter, let's just call it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that was right at about 3:15. One innovation that the SEC has taken the initiative of bringing to the forefront this year, we talked about it on this program before, but for those of you that might not have heard it, you've seen it now, and it's the clock, the digital clock that's next to the timeout coordinator that tells you as a fan, and it's all for the fans. That was the whole initiative, is to allow the fans to know how long that commercial break is going to be. So as the clock is counting down, you know how it is, how much longer it's going to be before they snap the football. The great thing, too, is that they've gone to the television partners and say, we're not floating breaks. Floating breaks is wrong. This is going to be a firm time limit in terms of the number, the length of the break.
Yeah, there was a lot of play, and obviously if you give the television partners that opportunity, they're going to throw in as many commercials and things as they can, and so that's really good to hold them accountable and for people to be able to see it, because when you do have those television breaks, it seems like, you know, it takes forever, and so having a clock there really helps to be able to see it and recognize it.
I'm Mike Kelly. Thanks for listening to this week's Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, brought to you by Shelter Insurance.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Mike Kelly, brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.